Okay. Only 10 more presents to wrap. You're almost at the finish line. But first... There. The last one. Enjoy a Coca-Cola for a pause that refreshes.
If you're a smoker or vapor ready to make a change, you really only need one good reason. But with Zyn nicotine pouches, you'll discover many good reasons. Zyn is America's number one nicotine pouch brand. Plus, Zyn offers a robust rewards program. There are lots of options when it comes to nicotine satisfaction, but there's only one Zyn. Check out Zyn.com/find to find Zyn at a store near you. Warning, this product contains nicotine. Nicotine is an addictive chemical.
Want to get closer to Formula One than ever before? F1 Experiences has you covered. With official ticket packages offered at every race on the calendar, F1 Experiences ensures you get the very most out of your Grand Prix weekend. Take in the glitz and glamour of Monaco, soak up the Miami sunshine, or walk in the footsteps of legends at iconic circuits like Suzuka, Spa, and Silverstone. From the best grandstands to world-class hospitality, plus exclusive access, including pit lane walks, tours of the paddock, and guest appearances from top F1 insiders, there's no better way for you to experience the ultimate race weekend. F1 Experiences, the closest you can get to Formula One. Visit f1experiences.com/beyondthegrid to book your official ticket package today. Hello, everyone, and welcome to the first F1 Beyond the Grid of 2025 with me, Tom Clarkson. This is the show where the fastest drivers in the world slow down and open up about their racing lives and much more besides. And to kick off the new season, I've been speaking to a man who, as Max Verstappen's new Red Bull Racing teammate, has taken what many believe is the toughest seat in Formula One.
You can't look at it in that way. It's more the opportunity to have him as a teammate. We did a test last year, a comparison together in Silverstone, and it was just one lap each. But that data I took home, I've got it sitting in the shelf. You know, I took it home and had that all year just because it was the first time ever that I'd been able to compare directly against him and see exactly, you know, what he does as a driver. And now I get that in every single session this year.
Hello, Red Bull Racing driver.
Hello.
Liam Lawson, it is great to have you on the show. How are you?
I'm good. I'm very excited. I just want to get racing, to be honest.
You've got a spring in your step. I was expecting more of a beard, actually, as well. I've been told, oh, he's grown a beard.
I shaved it. But I can't really grow a beard, honestly. Like, my beard is this bit here, and I get like a tiny bit here, but it doesn't fill out. So I try and get it to grow out. This is way too into detail, but I try and get it to grow out and then it kind of doesn't really work. So I end up shaving it off. But
well, this is stuff we need to know. I mean, look, how different has life been for you since you signed for the big team?
Well, I mean, to be honest, it was at the end of the season last year, after the season. And then I just went home. I went back to New Zealand and obviously it was, you know, really cool to be home and feel the support at home. But at the same time, I just could try to escape, you know, everything and enjoy that bit of time off. So for that period, it was not really anything had changed. And obviously I'm just around my family and everybody like that. So they all treat me the same. And then coming back early, it's the first time I've done a preseason, which I'm stoked about because every other time it's been the week before or something like that, you know, or in 2023, the night before that I got told I was going to drive. So yeah, to do the proper preparations has been really, really nice. But honestly, it's dragging on a bit now, so I just want to go racing.
Tell us a little bit more about the preseason. Has this been the busiest winter of your racing career? And I include F2 and everything you've done since you started racing at the age of seven.
Definitely. Definitely. It's summertime, actually, for me, just because I was in New Zealand. But yeah, coming back in January, in the middle of January, is something I'd never done before. So yeah, normally I'm basically spending that whole period all the way up until race one, because as a reserve, other than some simulator work, there's nothing to come back for. So it's been busy. We've done everything, really everything we can do to be prepared. Obviously, it's going to be a tough start with a whole bunch of tracks that I've never done, but that's also how a lot of my F1 career so far has been. It's been a lot of tracks that I've never done. So
getting to Liam, you're also someone who doesn't need a lot of practice, right? Because you've got this amazing stat that you've won first time out in so many of the junior categories.
Yeah, I don't know, honestly, what... it's a good stat, but it's also not good because you need to see it through at the same time. And so far, you know, for a championship, I've finished second too many times in my career in lots of categories. So, yeah, a championship's obviously something that it takes a lot of things outside of just driving the race car. So, yeah, but I think it's going to be, I mean, for sure it's going to be tough. They're also, you know, quite hard tracks. You know, Melbourne's a track, very high commitment.
Have you driven anything at Melbourne? Did I see you in a V8 supercar there?
Yeah, I did like three laps in a V8 supercar last year. So that's my on-track preparation. I think the speeds will be slightly different this year. But it's a cool track. And I think the layout this year, or the latest layout that they've done in the last couple of years has been really good for F1. The way the cars flow, it's cool. Looks cool.
It's got a nice rhythm to it now, isn't it?
It does, yeah. There was a couple of awkward sort of chicanes before that didn't suit F1 cars. So yeah, they've opened it up and now it's fast and flowing. And that famous turn 9 entry is now even faster than it ever was because of the speed you carry all the way up to it. So
you said a moment ago, I'm excited. Look, has the euphoria worn off yet that you are now you're in the big time, you're racing for a hugely successful team in Formula One, and do the stakes feel a bit different now?
I mean, yes, for sure. You know, it's every year is the most important year. I always say at the start of the year, this is the most important year of my career. And it's always going to be like that, realistically. So it is. It's very, very important this year. I thought maybe it had worn off a little bit, but then we went testing and it's little things. It's like the fuel rig that has my number on it and stuff like that around the garage. It just has my name or my number. And that stuff is like the little things that get me excited. So I'd say it definitely hasn't worn off yet. But at the same time, it's, you know, been a lot of preparations, and I know that when we go to Melbourne and we go racing, there's going to be so much, because it was like this last time, there's just so much that you've got to go through that for a race weekend, really all you're thinking about is performing in the car. And at that point, I think I'll just be focused on the job.
Have you upped the training this winter?
For sure. I think you're always kind of doing this anyway.
I mean, it's cumulative
over the years.
It?
Yeah, but... it is. And I think also because I drove the car and you work out pretty quickly things that are strengths, because everybody has things that they're good at. You know, a lot of people just naturally have maybe a strong neck, and then others don't have a strong neck, or, you know, physically in different ways. There's things that you suit and things that you don't. So
what can you shift with your neck?
I think 60 kilos, something like that, like laterally, which honestly is not as high as some. I know others lift can do more. It's more about the endurance of your neck, honestly. Like Formula One is such a weird, you know, you get in the car at the start of a test and you think, you do a couple of laps and you think, oh, I'm you know, I'm good. I've done a good amount of neck training. I feel good. And within three laps, all of a sudden it's gone. And three laps ago, you could have sworn that you're physically you were fine. But it's just, it's that endurance that's really, really tough.
What does it mean, my neck has gone? Because if you
can't
haven't...
hold your head up.
You literally can't
literally
hold
can't
your head
hold
up.
Your
you
head
can't
up.
Look to the apex of the corner.
The corner's going that way and your head is over here and there's nothing you can do. No matter how hard you try, you get angry. Like I've got angry in the car before because I'm like, you lose performance when you can't hold your head up. And you're trying to do it, you know, your qualifying lap or something like that. Normally it's not in qualifying because that'd be pretty bad. In a race, really, where you're going to struggle with it. But yeah, it's really frustrating because it's not like other muscles where, like if you're in the gym and you're doing a bicep curl and it starts to get really heavy, you can kind of push through a couple more reps and do that. But with your neck, once it's gone, it's just gone. And there's nothing, at least in my situation, there's nothing really you can do.
How long does it take to come back?
Days.
Okay.
Yeah, days. It's gone for the weekend. You'll get back in the car, do a couple of laps, and then it's gone again.
Yeah, you don't want that.
No. I mean, that's like early stages, you know, for me when I first stepped in a Formula One car, when I first tested, and there's just, you know, you do all the training in the world, but nothing can prepare you for it. So I'd like to say now I'm in a more comfortable position, but it's something that, you know, we have to work very, very hard
on. So when you had no preparation at all for Zandvoort race number one back in 2023, I mean, probably a slight blessing that it was a wet race, but still, how was the neck?
The craziest part about that was... I was racing in Japan in that year in Super Formula, And the average weight in Japan in that series is so much lower than Formula One. I was heavy. So I went there and they were like, you know, for weight distribution, we need you to lose weight, basically. And I was like, you know, I don't really know if I can.
Yeah, you haven't got much to lose.
No, I spent that year, that first part of 2023, I was actually like sort of training at a lighter weight than I'd want to be at. And so just to be able to, you know, be competitive in Super Formula. And then I got the call up for F1 the night before and I hadn't been training for F1 at that point. So for those weeks, it was just a totally different way of training and it was really, really tough.
And when you lose weight, does it come off your neck? Does the muscle come off your neck? Is
it's
that one of the
your
first?
Neck. It's everything. Okay. Yeah. It's even your arms and your hands. It's your, you know, you need really good core stability. And then it's just your endurance. Because when you're pulling a lot of G as well, you can't really breathe. You know, you're doing really high intensity training, but you also can't breathe properly just because of that G. Yeah. It's also very dependent on what track you're at. You know, like a place, that was the year we did Qatar when it was insanely hot. And that was just the hardest thing I've ever done in a race car.
What, couldn't breathe because it was so hot?
I was, at that point, it was the last race I did, but I was still, you know, I'd been training all year for Super Formula and then I had to do these races and Qatar was the hardest, you know, probably physically the hardest race. And we'd done Singapore as well and everybody said that was the hardest one. And then we went to Qatar and it was even harder. It was just the perfect storm. They had the issues with the tires. So we had 3 mandatory pit stops.
Right.
So you were just flat out.
It was just quali for 3
the whole time. Yeah. And it was just the hard. Yeah, it was. I remember looking at my steering wheel.
Didn't you not use a drinks bottle back then?
And I didn't know how to. Yeah, I freaked myself out in Zandvoort because I got the tube stuck up my nose.
You told us on the show.
I sorted
that one out, I hope.
Well, I did. But over those races, I didn't want to use the drink tube just because it kind of gave me nightmares. Yeah.
How do you solve that? Just shorten the tube?
Shorten the tube, yeah. I didn't know. And yeah, I didn't know then that you could do that, basically. Nobody told me. They just gave the tube comes with the helmet. And I was like, okay, you know, I guess you just use it, but I didn't know that you had to cut it. So
stuff you need to know. And you can only find out when you're in Formula One, right?
Yeah, unfortunately I found out in the race. Yeah.
Okay. Only 10 more presents to wrap. You're almost at the finish line. But first, there, the last one. Enjoy a Coca-Cola for a pause that refreshes.
There's more to come from Liam in a moment, but after the show, why not go and check out Formula One's other official podcasts? There's F1 Nation, which is your home for race previews and reviews from inside the F1 paddock. And I'm joined this week by Romain Grosjean and Laura Winter for our 2025 season preview. And F1 Explains is where your questions about Formula One are answered by experts. This week's episode is all about rookie seasons with special guest Jenson Button. Search your podcast app for F1 Nation and F1 Explains. Look, you've just come back from testing. Let's talk about the car now. A few reliability gremlins, but you did, what was it, 149 laps over the 1.5 days. Tell us about the car. What is the RB21 like?
So far, it feels pretty good. Obviously, we're in a situation where, you know, the regulations are sort of at the end of, you know, we change next year, basically. So everybody's more or less pushing the limits of what's capable out of these cars. And that's why it's been very, very close in the last 12 months. So in a way, not a huge amount is going to change, I don't expect at least. And I think in testing, it all looks, I would say, as expected. But it feels good. I think for us, the main thing is having the car in a nicer window to drive. That's basically a better balance for us, you know, as drivers, because it makes a big difference. You know, you can have a really fast race car, but if it's really hard to drive or really sensitive, or then it's going to be difficult and you're going to lose performance there. So the main thing is it feels good.
So it's in a better window. That means it's more drivable, less oversteer. That was definitely a factor.
Yeah, it's not always just oversteer. When, you know, it's just you're looking for the perfect through corner balance. You know, a car that does everything you want it to do from the moment you turn to basically releasing the steering wheel on the gas out of the corner. And there's lots of phases you go through in a corner there. So you want to try and have the most connected, well-balanced car that does what you want it to do. it feels positive, but obviously you don't really know until you go to Melbourne, until you actually put the car in qualifying, run it in its full, you know, proper performance mode.
It was also unseasonably cold, wasn't it, in Bahrain?
That was the thing, is it's really hard
to take.
What
have we actually learned?
We've learned for tracks that are going to be potentially at that temperature, you know, what the car could be like. But I think...
Vegas? I can't think of anywhere else.
Yeah, Vegas. If it's ever just, you know, Silverstone sometimes can be pretty cold. But then you've got different surfaces. You know, Bahrain's a very unique surface. It's very abrasive and harsh. Like, I've never driven a car... When it rained, which I've also never driven in the rain in Bahrain, but when it did rain, I've never had this where I'm driving around and I could see the tires going dark because of the damp. You know, they were getting damp basically, but there was still grip because the surface is so abrasive that you're kind of not gripping to the surface. You're kind of gripping into the harshness of it and you still have grip, which was super weird. Because when you see rain on your visor, you see the tires going dark, you like, you know, basically getting wet and you think you have no grip. But then all of a sudden there was.
The old track surface in Barcelona used to be like that. Very abrasive.
Old surfaces are like that. When they resurface tracks, it's a lot smoother and it holds a lot more water on the surface of it. You get a lot more standing water. So
how confident do you feel in the car heading to Melbourne?
I think as confident as I can be, realistically. You know, I know that, you know, as we said, that there are a bunch of tracks that I've not done. So obviously I'm not going in there thinking that from the very start we're going to be winning races, qualifying on pole and sitting off into the sunset. I know it's going to be extremely tough, but for the amount of prep we've done, I think we've done everything we can. There's really not much more to do for me. I've just got, you know, this awesome opportunity in front of me to make the most of.
So it's going to be sunny. At the minute, the forecast is for sun on Friday and Saturday, and then maybe some rain at about race start time, actually.
Yeah, but I mean, you can't tell from now. Like, the amount of times we check, and we have the most accurate weather forecasting, you know, systems in all of weather, and we still get it wrong. So I just can't,
You're not buying it.
Even the night before, you look at the weather forecast and it doesn't do what it says it's going to do. So,
and you do get four seasons in one day in Melbourne.
You do. But I think the main thing is probably, at the moment, it's quite warm there. So I expect it to be very warm when we're, regardless of the weather, it's going to be quite warm, I think.
But look, so there's been limited mileage for you in testing. Actually, compared to the other drivers on the grid, you're one of the fewest in terms of laps. But you have driven RB19 and RB20 in the past. Does this car feel the same in terms of, you know, what to expect from it?
It's definitely not the same. They're all evolutions of each other. So it's just an evolution of last year
But in terms of extracting a lap time from it, is the methodology from what your inputs, is it the same as last year, do you think?
It's similar, but it's, you know, we're trying to make the car faster and we're trying to make it easier to drive and it does feel better to drive. Obviously for me as well, I've come from a car that wasn't a Red Bull racing car, so that had its own sort of unique characteristics, and this car's actually quite different to drive. For me, it's very different because I haven't raced a Red Bull car before. So although I tested it, you know, it's not what I'm used to. So in a lot of ways, it's going to be new for me.
How different is it? I mean, same power unit?
It's very different.
I'm comparing it to the V-carb of last year.
It's very different, honestly. It's more different than I think people would expect. Little things make a massive difference. And the two cars, they have this, you know, same sort of steering wheel. And as you say, same power unit and stuff like that. Same suspension. But yeah, aero-wise, it's very, very different. And that makes it, you know, Formula One is all about basically... about aero, so it is very, very different to drive.
And what about the teams? How different is RBR compared to Racing Bulls? I mean, the debriefs.
Yeah, I think
done the same way,
done in similar ways. But where I'm quite lucky is I actually spent a lot more time with this team, with Red Bull, than I did with V-carb in the early years as reserve. So when I first came into Formula One in 2021. As a reserve, I was always with Red Bull. So for all those races, I was watching Max and Checo and I actually spent a lot of time with this team. It was only really 2024 that I was a V-carb reserve and spent more time with that team. So,
what about Helmut? Does he treat you differently now you're in the big team?
No, definitely not. I think he'll always treat us the same. In a lot of ways, and I've said this before, but I'm very, very grateful I'm grateful that I was in the program very young. You know, I was 16 when I first joined, And I got to experience those years, you know, being very young. I didn't like it at the time, but looking back, those years of that, you know, extreme pressure, feeling like every time you got on the race car that a mistake or a bad race or, you know, could cost you your whole career, because that's the kind of pressure that he liked to put on us. That sucked at the time, but looking back, you know, that stuff that it builds you for something, you know, for the pressure that you deal with when you come into Formula One.
It's the carrot or the stick, isn't it? And Helmut very much is bashing you with a stick, isn't it?
Yeah, always. Yeah.
And you react obviously quite well to that.
Yeah. Yeah, you could have 9 sensational races and the 10th one you make a mistake and he'll be on you for it. So, yeah, stuff like that where basically over the years it was always tough, like the phone calls, you'd see the name pop up on the phone and you knew 9 times out of 10 it wasn't going to be a good phone call. But yeah, again, all those things, just they build you for the pressure, because honestly, without that, there's no other category that has this much pressure, that has this many eyes on them than Formula One. So you could do any series, but if you haven't experienced that, it's a shock coming to Formula One.
Lando Norris said last year, the driving is the easy bit in Formula One. It's everything else around that makes it so difficult.
Yeah.
You agree with him?
Yeah, 100%. It's, driving is the easy part, but it's 50% or what, it's just not the full, it's not even close to being the full picture. There's so many things that come into it. And yeah, the ability to put yourself in a mindset, in a good mindset, to focus on what you need to focus on when you're in a race car, is you're driving these things on the absolute limit at ridiculous speeds. And if there is any part of your thought process that isn't, you know, thinking about the right thing, if you're thinking about something that you shouldn't, or you're putting pressure on yourself, it's tiny things, that split second decisions.
Yeah, but so much of that is experience, isn't it? You're 11 races old in Formula One, knowing how to, I mean, I'm going to sound like Jackie Stewart now, but that mind management that you're referring to only comes with experience, doesn't it?
It does. It does. And in any case, I think everybody that's come into Formula One has made mistakes at the start and they've learned. If you look at Max when he came in, if you look at Lando, if you look at everybody that came in, they all have grown over time. And I think Max now compared to 10 years ago is ultimately a far better driver, much more complete driver than he was. So I'm very aware that there's going to be mistakes along the way. So for me, it's just learning as much as possible. And having him as well as a teammate is super important for me to be able to learn from.
We'll come on to Max in a minute. Just one more thing on Helmut. Was it Helmut who informed you that you've got the drive back in December?
I mean, I was speaking to both Helmut and Christian a lot during that time period, especially
that time period being what, the weeks, the days after Abu Dhabi,
the weeks leading up to Abu Dhabi. Honestly, the races leading up to it. I think we were very aware that there was a chance. We didn't know. I mean, I didn't know what was going to happen, and I didn't know if they were going to make a change or what was going to happen. But I knew that it was an option, basically, depending on how the races went, depending on how I went and how the others went, that there was potential for a change. So, you know, I was banging down their door, you know, trying to obviously show them that I was ready. And that's both Christian and Helmut, but it was Christian who informed me.
So you are actually ringing, you know, like in the junior formulas, it's Helmut ringing you.
You're ringing, well, yeah.
You're ringing them now. Do you have a manager or are you driving that yourself?
I have a manager, but it was something that when I was out of the seat, I felt at the start of last year, I felt completely out of, like I had no control. It was horrible the first part of that year, even though Christian told me that he would give me a chance. You're trusting that one word that was given to me back in 2023. He said, you'll have your chance.
And well, after Daniel got back in the vehicle.
After he got back in the car, yeah. So Christian said you'll have your chance, but you have no idea when that's going to be. And you're hanging on that one sentence for months and months and months, and you're doing all the work and you're preparing and you're watching the races and watching how things, and you know, we all know how quickly things change in Formula One. So week into weekend, it was just, I felt so out of control, like I couldn't do anything. So I just tried to put as many things in my control and the relationships, and especially with Christian, make sure that he was aware that I was training, I was ready, I was basically overly confident for a position maybe that I wasn't ready for, but I was trying to show him that I was. And then, yeah, as we got closer to the end of the year, you know, for example, the race in Mexico last year, obviously,
you were quite feisty that
weekend. I made mistakes in that race, and I didn't want to leave the track without speaking to him and basically
speaking to Checo or speaking to Christian?
Speaking to Christian and basically, you know, making sure that I apologized and that he understood that I knew what I'd done, and just opportunities like that, that over the year, I just tried to make sure I took every single one.
That moment when you showed Checo that you were his number one fan as you went past him, is that uncharacteristic? Is that uncharacteristic of Liam Lawson?
I think so. Although my dad called me after the race and he said, "For God's sakes, Liam, that's the second time you've done that." And I was like, the second time I've done that. And he reminded me of a time when I was like 12 and I must have done it to somebody in like, you know, back in New Zealand when I was racing in Formula First or something like that. And I got called to the stewards for it. But no, honestly, it's out of character, and it's not something that you'll see me do again. That's for sure.
And did Christian understand where it came from in terms of, you know, the stakes were high, emotions were running high, both in your cockpit and Checo's?
Yes, but at the same time, you know, it's important. I think, and he felt it was important to make it clear to me that it's something that can never happen again. And just the race itself, you know, the incident didn't need to happen as well. It was a race that cost both of us points, not for me in that situation ultimately, but for them, you know, they lost points because of the incident. So regardless of whose fault it was unnecessary. It didn't need to happen between us. So that's what, you know, I think was made clear to me. And, you know, I realized basically and I apologized, but I just didn't want to leave without speaking to him and showing that and him sitting on it for days, you know, and before the next race.
I think you have to take the initiative. I think back to Damon Hill getting his break with Williams in 1993. He wrote a letter to Frank Williams saying, "You can trust me, please do it." Ayrton Senna telling Frank Williams that he wanted to drive for him for nothing. It seems to me that the drivers who actually do it themselves invariably are the ones who make things happen. You're proof of that.
I've got my foot in the door. So now is the hard part, yeah.
Okay. Only 10 more presents to wrap. You're almost at the finish line. But first, there, the last one. Enjoy a Coca-Cola for a pause that refreshes.
If you're a smoker or vapor ready to make a change, you really only need one good reason. But with Zyn nicotine pouches, you'll discover many good reasons. Reasons like Zyn nicotine pouches are still America's number one choice for smoke-free, hands-free nicotine satisfaction. Or because you can choose between 10 varieties, each available in either 3 or 6 milligrams of nicotine satisfaction. Or even because Zyn offers a robust rewards program full of premium items and experiences. How's that for good reasons? Now, if you're still unsure whether Zyn is the right change for you, there's only one way to find out. Check out Zyn.com/find to find Zyn at a store near you. You have a lot of options when it comes to nicotine satisfaction, but there's only one Zyn. Warning, this product contains nicotine. Nicotine is an addictive chemical.
Who called you? Was it Helmut or Christian?
It was Christian. I knew about the meeting that was being held on the Monday after the race. And yeah, basically, I couldn't not do anything during the day. So I just went to the gym. Like we don't do an intense gym session the day after a Grand Prix because we've just done a Grand Prix. But I had nothing else. I couldn't think of anything else to do. And we had testing the next day. So we were just sitting in a hotel in Abu Dhabi. So I went with my trainer and we just did a workout that I would enjoy doing. And it was midway through that session that I had a text from Christian.
Can you share or is it private?
It was one line. It was basically, all good, keep it to yourself. That was the text. And then he called me a couple of hours later, basically. He said, give me a call later on. And he did. He gave me the one-liner, welcome to Rebel Racing. So, yeah, it's pretty cool.
Who was the first person you called?
My dad. My dad was the first person. So, you know, he's somebody that has played a massive role in just, you know, me growing up as a person, especially the early years. My dad's didn't race in motorsport. You know, I'm not from a motorsport family. It's not like he grew up racing, but because it was my passion, he's sort of the main influence I had as a kid who, you know, let me believe that if I worked hard enough for something, that no matter what it was, I could do it. And no matter what anybody else said, that basically it's, if you work hard enough, you know, it's something you can do. And he just gave as long as I worked hard, he gave every single thing possible, financially, time, into me basically pursuing my dream, to the point where it's, you know, pretty much broken my parents now. So yeah, just very, very lucky. So to be able to call him and tell him that it's all been worth it, it was very, very cool.
Imagine their emotions were running high, as they were in Singapore when you got your first points. I remember you had mom, dad, sister, I think was there, wasn't she?
Girlfriend. Everybody thought it was my sister, but it was my girlfriend. Like, the amount of stuff I got tagged. It's because we had this one photo awkwardly where I stood like on the other side of my parents and they were like, oh, it must be a sister. So no, she's my girlfriend. We've been together 2.5 years.
Emotions were running high.
Yeah.
That was the only point I was going to make with that.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. Definitely. That whole period, you know, getting the shot in the first place, you know, just getting a chance in Formula One was a massive achievement then. So for them to, you know, I didn't know how long it was going to last. So to have them in Singapore was very, very cool. And they'll both be in Melbourne, that's for sure.
And please tell me that after Christian sent you that text, the gym session stopped.
It didn't, no.
No, no, you carried on.
Yeah, we carried on. It was a much more fun second half of the gym session. But we carried on. Yeah, gains before anything. So it was cool. I sent him a photo.
You sent Christian a photo?
Yeah, I was like, I sat on this for like 20 minutes. Like, should I send him a photo of me in the gym or should I, you know, show him that I'm working hard? And I did. And it's literally just me like grinning in the mirror. Like, I'll find the photo. It's not a proud photo.
But it's the first picture of Liam Lawson as a Red Bull Racing driver.
Yeah, here it is.
Okay, world exclusive.
It's literally me flexing in the gym with the biggest grin. Like, the funny part is it's just a grin on my face. Like, I can't not be smiling.
Now, look, you mentioned Max. It's hugely exciting coming here. You're in, you know, one of the best teams in Formula One. Just look at the recent success. There is a but that I wanted to ask you about, in that you're coming into what is one of the hardest jobs in Formula One, being Max Verstappen's teammate. How do you view that challenge?
I think you can't look at it in that way, because if you're looking at it in that way, yeah, if I'm coming in and thinking to myself that I'm competing against him, then obviously we're all competing against each other. I'm very aware of that. But in my position, coming in as a rookie, effectively a rookie, or coming to tracks that I've never done, first full season, you know, like I said, if I look at Max 10 years ago to how he is now, he's improved massively. So it's more the opportunity to have him as a teammate, you know, to learn off. For me, for my growth in Formula One, we're always learning. There's really nobody better to have to learn off. He's literally the best at the moment in the sport. So to be able to see everything, you know, like we did a test last year and a comparison together in Silverstone, and it was just one lap each. But that data I took home, I've got it sitting in a shelf. You know, I took it home and had that all year, just because it was the first time ever that I'd been able to compare directly against him and see exactly, you know, what he does as a driver. And although it's one lap and it's, you know, it was just important to have that. So, and now I get that in every single session this year.
And when you look at his data, what is he doing differently? If anything,
it's nothing stand out. It's not like he's got the specific technique that just makes him amazing. It's everything, putting everything together. Over a lap, being for him, it's more confidence than anything, I think. And especially in the way the car's been in the last couple of years, it's been a very difficult car to drive. And because of his confidence, he's able to drive it. So, and you see that in the way, you see that in data just by, you know, entry speeds and things like that. But it's nothing stand out.
Someone's going to be coming on Beyond the Grid later in the year, a former champion, a great observer of racing drivers. I've already done the interview. It was over the winter. And he was out in Bahrain last year and he was watching Max. And I said, well, what do you think stands out when you're watching from the outside? And I think he was at turn 10 in Bahrain. And he said, it's like he can feel what the car is doing just before Checo. It's like his bum is so sensitive. There's something about it that he knows what it's doing earlier than anyone else. Does that make any sense to you, that comment?
For sure it does. There's no situation where you're really ever driving the same car lap to lap. You always got differences in temperatures, tires wearing, and depending on what compound you're on, wind direction changes. Everything's always variable in Formula One. It's changing lap to lap, literally, and corner to corner. So there's a part of driving a Formula One car that is not just as simple as doing what is said on a graph and basically this is how you drive it and this is what you do. Obviously, we're studying these small details to put a better lap together, but there's a part of driving a Formula One car that's adapting. Corner to corner, lap to lap, you are feeling, there's a huge part of it that's what you're feeling. And you're getting different sensations depending on all these different variables lap to lap. So it does, because you're always adapting, and depending on how quickly you can adapt. And I think that's why when it clearly, you know, you get big changes, whether it's wet or mixed conditions, it's even like lap one of a session. If you watch a free practice session, normally he'll go out and be quickest out the box, regardless of how the session ends. It's just that adapting, that feeling, and it's that confidence that basically he has that confidence to throw a car into a corner and feel basically exactly what it's going to do. It's just adapting, I think, is what he's very good at.
And you mentioned that Silverstone test last year, the Bahrain test. Do you feel he's being open with you, dare I say it, trying to help you?
Always, yeah. And even before I was in the team, like before I was even a Formula One driver, he's always been super kind, you know, to have an open conversation. Like when I first came into the team back in 2021, you know, part of me back then, I wasn't a driver. I'd just kind of come into the sport, and I was probably a little bit like, a little, putting him on a pedestal a little bit because of who he is and all the drivers as well. And I think he recognized that and made an effort to talk to me because he knew that I'd like it. You know, he knew that I'd think that was really, really cool. So he would just come and talk to me about F2 or what, you know, what racing I was doing. Or
he's got an encyclopedic knowledge of racing. Yeah, actually, hasn't he?
He watches everything.
Yeah. He's rallying now because of his dad as well.
Dad, yeah, yeah. The obviously motorsport family. And he's massively into it. So that I always thought was very, very cool. And then when I drove the last couple of years, if I ever asked him anything, he was always open to talking about it. And obviously now getting to work with him and see exactly, it's quite cool to have watched it for quite a few years and now drive the same car and feel what he's feeling as well. And, you know, basically relate to each other. It's the first time I'd actually been able to relate to him personally on driving and stuff like that.
And do you want the same things from the car? Is your feedback the same?
So far, it actually has been, which is always positive for a team. But obviously, it's very early days. So, I don't love the term, does this driving style suit you? Or, you know, what's your driving style? Because at the end of the day, we're meant to be the best in the world. We're meant to be able to drive what we're given. And that adapting is basically what we're meant to be good at. That's what we're meant to basically do as drivers. So, you know, driving style-wise, I try and avoid saying this is specifically what I like. Well, obviously you have things that you like, but try not to say that, oh, if the car's like this and I can't drive it because it doesn't suit my driving style. So yeah, but so far it's been, I'd say, pretty similar.
Has anyone in the team tried to explain to you why it wasn't working for Checo? Can you learn anything from why it didn't work for him?
I think, you know, the only person who truly knows is probably him. But we can all have opinions and I think ultimately it's probably just confidence, you know, getting in the car. And, you know, because there's years where he was very close to Max and starts of a season potentially where he was, you know, very close, or even sometimes he would be quicker than Max. And so then that tells you that, okay, clearly, you know, he has the ability, which I think most people at this level, you know, to get to this point, you got to have that ability. So if then he doesn't have it now, or it's been more difficult recently, then it's more mental than anything, I would say. It's more just a confidence thing, not being able to confidently throw the car into a corner and know what you're going to get. So, but ultimately, he's the only person that will truly know that.
I mean, your race engineer, Richard Wood, was Checo's performance engineer, wasn't he? Has he sort of told you that Checo tried to take the car in a direction that it didn't want to go in? And so note to self, don't do that yourself kind of thing.
Honestly, it's not specifically towards Checo. Honestly, we can always learn from all drivers and you know, mistakes that we're all making. So you know, there's stuff that potentially in the car, that directions they went to try and extract something out of the car that potentially didn't work, but nothing, yeah, nothing really directly just towards something, yeah, something related to him.
Okay, only 10 more presents to wrap. You're almost at the finish line. But first... There, the last one. Enjoy a Coca-Cola for a pause that refreshes.
Okay, so you are 11 races old in Formula One. When do you think we're going to see you at your peak, if that's the right question, in terms of the learning curve is still vertical at the minute? When do you feel it's going to start leveling out and you're going to start to feel properly comfortable at this level?
Maybe when I've done all the tracks. I think that can help. But it's honestly, to answer that question is really tough. I have no idea. Everybody's different. Everybody has different levels of learning, how quickly they adapt. So for me, I'd like to say and think, you know, I'm better than I've ever been now, but I'm still on that progression. So it's about, for me, you know, utilizing this position against, you know, with Max in this position. But I don't know. Yeah, I have no idea when.
But at least when we get to the summer break, second half of the season is one that you're more familiar with.
I think so.
The shape of it.
Yeah, I think if I'm looking at the season as a whole right now, I'm going, okay, first part of the year, it's going to be the toughest part. You know, new car, never started the season, new tracks.
How many of them are new? So Melbourne is new, apart from those three laps in a supercar.
Yeah.
Shanghai?
Shanghai's new, sprint weekend as well.
Suzuka, you know, like the back of your hand.
Done that a couple of times, luckily.
And then
Miami.
Bahrain, you know, Saudi.
I've done an F2.
In F2?
Yeah.
So I feel that counts.
Yep.
Miami?
Miami I've never done. And Canada, I've never done.
Do you know, it begs the question, how good are the simulators, right? How much of a preparation is the sim, which I think is about 10 meters from where we're sitting now?
We're about to find out. they're getting better every single year. The teams are using, because we can't test these, you know, they're the only way that we can actually test, you know, new items and come up with new ideas.
So you've never been to Melbourne in a Formula One car, but you feel you know it quite well already?
Yeah. Yes, but it is always, honestly, when you drive out in real life, there's an element of it that's different because of it's just the sensations, the G that, you know, everything, the forces that you're pulling are totally different to what you're living in a simulator. I don't think they'll ever be able to build a simulator that pulls the levels of G that we do that is accurate, you know, and things like that. So that's the one part that you just don't get. So I know roughly, you know, exactly what speeds and gears and things like that I'm going to be taking corners. But at the same time, from where you start the weekend, tracks are always totally different. Sometimes they're being resurfaced. They're always green at the start. They always start really slippery and they build up, you know, over the weekend. And again, it's just that adapting that it's just the most important part about being a Formula One driver and driving these cars is being able to adapt in every single session.
Do you feel like a rookie coming in?
Not in Formula One. But, you know, there's going to be these tracks that I've never done, you know, and those, in that case, I'm going to drive out in Melbourne and probably be like, this feels new because it is. So no, I think in Formula One, I feel like I've been here long enough, you know, maybe 11 races is not much, but just being in the sport for 4 years as a reserve and being in the background, no, I don't feel like a rookie.
Of the newbies, who have you raced the most? And I'm thinking, what have we got? We've got Antonelli, Hadjar, Behrman, Jack.
Never raced them. Jack.
Jack Doohan.
Jack have raced a lot, yeah. Jack have raced since F4 we raced each other. So he's the one I've got the most experience racing against. There was one time he crashed into me in F2 and we had a massive argument. He was trying to apologize or it basically explain that it wasn't his fault when it clearly was. And I didn't want to have any of it basically. And we got him, and then about 5 minutes later it was all good. So
did he have his intimidating buzz cut?
He did, or, yeah. I think he was right. Buzzed in F2. He goes back and forth. I've never seen somebody grow hair so fast.
It's kind of Beckham-esque, isn't it?
I don't know how, honestly, to have, he had such long hair and then he's just shaved it off again.
But it's an interesting shift, isn't it, for Formula One, that it's gone for youth.
It's great.
Let's get rid of the word rookie. It's gone for youth
yeah.
this year. What is it? Nearly a third of the grid is new. Why do you think that is?
Luckily, you know, for me, luckily, I had a shot in F1 that gave my, you know, gave me a chance to, because at the end of the day, Formula One teams, you can do a great thing over the years. And I think in the, you know, ignore the last 12 months. If you look before that, you could have great seasons of F2 and F3 and whatever. But for a team to trust you to drive their Formula One's so different. It doesn't relate to any other category, especially, you know, F2 and F3. They're actually, there's not really a single thing you do driving an F2 car that relates to an F1 car other than turning a steering wheel, honestly. But the way you do it is totally different. And the detail and how technical it is. And I think it was hard maybe for teams to trust youth over experience. And then we had these occasions where I got my shot as a reserve, Ollie got his shot as a reserve, and it opened people's eyes maybe to, you know, we spent hours and hours and hours in these simulators and with the team preparing for this, that maybe we are actually ready for it and can, you know, be trusted in this sort of situation. So I think maybe that's why there's been a bit of a shift, but it's so hard. You know, there's 20 seats and so many people that are pushing towards Formula One to get that opportunity is extremely rare.
Do you think you'll all stick together? Like, I'm thinking, let's fast forward to Abu Dhabi, to the driver's dinner. Do you think you'll all be hanging out together, the newbies? Or
it depends if we crash into each other, to be honest.
Sounds like you and Jack are good now.
Yeah, I mean, as guys, you know, you have a crash and then you get over it.
You say Max is welcoming to you. Is the establishment welcoming to the rookies as well? Do the likes of Lewis come and look out for you? And
Lewis, yeah, your Lewis has been. But I think because I had, you know, I raced last year and had a few altercations with a couple, so maybe they aren't so welcoming. But I think ultimately everybody has been pretty good about it, especially when I first came in, let's say.
Well, look, we're about to get on the plane to Melbourne. It's going to be hugely exciting. Is the whole family coming?
Just my parents. Just, yeah. I've got a big family, so
and
to get everybody.
Sister/girlfriend.
No, it's just girlfriend, and then I have a sister in New Zealand. That is, yeah, totally. My girlfriend's American.
Are they both coming?
My girlfriend's coming.
Yeah,
and my parents are coming. So when the next photo is taken with me and my parents and my girlfriend, everyone can be well aware that it is my girlfriend.
You know, Oscar Piastri's grandma cooked some Lamington cakes for the whole McLaren team at his first Australian Grand Prix. No pressure, but
I'm not Australian.
I know you're not, but it's the closest. Can we call this?
You just referred to me as. No, I think you did.
But
I think you forgot
for
a second.
Almost a home race. Almost.
You just forgot for a second.
No, I didn't. I didn't forget.
It is. You're right. It's close to a home race, and I'm, you know,
what, 3 hours on a plane.
3 hours on a plane. Yeah, and
so they're all coming with cake or without cake.
Well, now it's been 30 seconds. I've just found out. So I think maybe I'll have a phone call tonight and make something happen. It's big team. That's a lot of cake.
It'll be very popular. Look, Liam, best of luck from all of us.
Thank you.
I'm sure you're going to fly. Enjoy it.
I will. Thank you.
Look, it's great to have you on the show. Look, one final thing, and this is a question that I'm asking everybody this year. 75th anniversary of Formula One. Have you got a favorite moment in that time? It could be a race, it could be an overtake, it could be a qualifying lap.
Favorite moment
of the last 75 years of Formula One?
It's probably I was very heavily into Formula One. I was 8 years old in 2010, and that's probably when I started to follow the sport closely and understand everything about it. And that was the year that Red Bull won their first, you know, world championship. And I think they came into the weekend wasn't really looking. It was more between Fernando, I think, and
Mark Webber.
You're right. Yeah.
Fernando was 8 points ahead of Mark Webber coming into that weekend.
And Lewis was in the mix. They were all in the
Lewis
mix.
Lewis was in the mix. Four drivers could win it.
And Vettel
stole it at the flag.
Stuck it on pole and then just won the race. And Fernando was stuck behind Petrov.
That's right.
You remember the whole race, or for the whole second half of the race, could not, had big lunges, everything like that, and he just kept him behind. And that was, I think that was a pretty epic moment in Formula One. And that was, for me, the first big moment I saw, you know, as a kid watching it. That was like something that has definitely stuck with me. So, and now, you know, being, it's the crazy part is being here now. It's important to remember, I think, because, you know, we work so hard and we, you know, it's so fast moving that you forget so quickly what's going on. And if I, you know, was to tell my 8-year-old self what I'd be doing now, it would be, I don't, yeah, he wouldn't believe it. You know, it'd be pretty epic.
Mate, thanks for your time. Fly well.
Thanks.
Enjoy
for
Melbourne. See you there. Appreciate
it. Thank you.
I loved this chat. Thanks, Liam. He's quick, he's confident, and he's personable. But there's no doubt he's got a steep mountain to climb at these opening races of the season, at tracks he's never previously raced on. I think we need to wait for Suzuka, round 3, to gauge how he's settling in alongside Max. It's a circuit he knows well, and he's always been quick at. So good luck with everything, Liam. It's been great to catch up, and enjoy life in the fast lane. Well, that's almost it from me for episode 1 of the year. A couple more things before I go. Race tickets for this season are available now. Go to tickets.formula1.com to book grandstands, general admission, or hospitality. And why not download the F1 app and join F1 Unlocked for exclusive features and competitions. Thanks very much for listening. I will, of course, be back next week with another great guest from the world of Formula One. F1 Beyond the Grid is produced by Formula One and Audio Boom Studios. Until next time, keep it flat out. ...2025 marks the 60th anniversary of the first Honda Formula One victory in the 1965 Mexico Grand Prix. More than half a century later, the drive and innovation that powers Honda racing still inspires everything Honda does, from F1 victories to the Civic Hybrid being named the 2025 North American Car of the Year. Honda Racing is leading the charge when it comes to innovation. And here's where it gets really cool. Every Honda-powered F1 car is packed with sensors, hundreds of them, all feeding live data straight back to the Honda Racing team in Sakura, Japan. We're talking about real-time analysis that helps engineers squeeze out every ounce of performance on the track. And the amazing part? That same cutting-edge thinking is making its way into the cars we drive every day, thanks to the expertise of Honda Racing engineers. Their work has led to advances like the hybrid technology now used in Honda's consumer vehicles. The 2025 Civic Sedan Hybrid is engineered for fun, from the racetrack to your driveway. Learn more about the Civic and the latest Honda innovations at Honda.com.
Okay, only 10 more presents to wrap. You're almost at the finish line. But first... There, the last one. Enjoy a Coca-Cola for a pause that refreshes.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly.
Check engine, ABS, or maintenance light on? Take the guesswork out of your warning lights with O'Reilly Veriscan. The service is free and provides a report with solutions verified by ASE-certified master technicians. And if you need help, we could recommend a shop for you. Ask for O'Reilly Veriscan today.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.